welcome back to Back in My Play. This is episode number 63, the special holiday episode of Back in My Play. And this is all thanks to the special guest that I have on this episode. Of course, that is Mike. Mike, I guess, should I say of Other Ocean now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm Other Ocean for sure. And people, I think, recognize me for that.
Of course.
It's awesome to be here, by the way. Like 63 episodes still blows my mind.
Well, it's I took a little bit of a break because, you know, I just needed to refuel a little bit. Like work, real life stuff gets in the way. And, you know, I think for some of us, it's always – it's like really fun to just kind of like remember that, oh, man, I have this shelf of like, oh, man, I got like Mega Man 6 on my shelf. I should I still haven't played that yet. I want to go play that. So, like even today I hooked up my – RGB modded AV Famicom with Mega Man 6 to my brand new 65-inch LCD TV. It looks pretty good.
You know, no matter how much you try to get away from games, if you're a gamer, it keeps pulling you back in.
Totally. And obviously, as always, to the audience, thanks for continuing to keep those iTunes subscriptions going and keeping that RSS feed in your podcast directory or however you do it. But you know, we have a lot of stuff to talk about today, and I think the last time we were talking, it was right when you guys relaunched Digital Eclipse, because, of course, Mega Man Legacy Collection came out. Of course, you know, like yep. I said, I was talking about Mega Man, but, I mean, you guys have had that out for a couple months now, and now you're ramping up for the 3DS release, and you guys have an amiibo.
We do. That was crazy. Like during production of that game, we knew we were going to be doing the 3DS version. Mm-hmm. We knew it was going to be. We're just happy that it was going to be a boxed game because that's just exciting for us because we haven't worked on a packaged goods game in so long. Mm-hmm. And then just over the wire one day comes this little notification of like, hey, we want to do some amiibo support and we'll probably get a custom amiibo for it too. And we're just like, we lost it. It's pretty cool.
Well, I'm pumped. I got my I think the day Best Buy had their pre-order come up, I locked mine in just because it's just a great package that you guys put together. And it's, you know, those games are great to still have on the TV. And like it is almost like super weird to play those things on a 65-inch TV today. But I think they work so well on the handheld, on the go, and just for like when you're sitting waiting for your flight to take off. Of course, yeah, well, I'm going to play Mega Man 3 right now. Of course I am.
Yeah, and we couldn't have had a better selection of games to relaunch Digital Eclipse with. Like, Mega Man is probably one of the best franchises of all time, so it was awesome to kind of go out there with that. We have stuff in the works now that we can't announce yet or anything like that, mm-hmm. but thanks to Mega Man, it opened a lot of doors. So we're going to keep going on that road and try to give an even better treatment to things as we go on.
Good. It's, you know, I hope the community out there is supported. It seems like from just what I've seen in terms of discussions online, like it seems like a lot of people bought the game, at least in like the hardcore community. It just was a no-brainer at that price range to get all six of those games. And let's hope that we can get more of that stuff down the road.
Absolutely. I mean, everybody did rally. It sold really well. And I'll leave it to Capcom to talk about numbers when they want to. But right. It did really well especially for a collection. It's almost like we didn't skip a beat since the heyday of those older collections. So, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be looking now to kind of resurrect their old catalog, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to get your like temperature on where like retro games are today, because it seems just even since the last time that we talked, there's been just some big explosions. Like the guys at Brave Wave had that huge, like on the last episode, I talked to the guys at Brave Wave where they had the big Street Fighter 2 soundtrack with the vinyl and the CDs and like all these just great outlets for enjoying more like retro game stuff. I was just kind of wondering, you're so deep in this stuff. Like, what do you think the temperature is on just where retro games are in this landscape of still like AAA games and games that are just like Just Cause 3 pushing, you know, the capabilities of consoles and graphics?
It's funny because I always think there's going to be a moment when people aren't going to care about some of these older games, especially some of the really old stuff. Mm-hmm. but I think it's like film in many ways. We talked about this before, I think, where the more people come into gaming, which right now is at the all-time high, like I forgot how many hundreds of millions of people now game regularly, mm-hmm. The more mature the industry gets and games history gets, the more the audience grows for these older titles. Mainly, like we're seeing more people playing these older games that had not grown up with them but are just curious. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to spend money to find out about these games and where, like, a lineage came from or whatever, right? So, like, Castlevania is one of those games that if we were to put out a collection right now, I'm sure it would sell extremely well.
Yeah.
Mega Man, if we were to put out a Mega Man collection, I'm sure it would sell extremely well. And a majority of the people who would be playing those games had never probably played those games before. Mm-hmm. So we're at this really unique moment where people are approaching these games like you would, like, classic films and buying them on a more regular basis. There's always going to be a fixed market for it. And if you can build, like, your budgets against that and plan against that, it's profitable for people to do this so that they can keep doing it perpetually and that sort of thing. It's not like the, you know, you're not going to make as much money as, like, a Call of Duty or anything on these older games at this point, but you're going to get, I think we have a regular amount of money that we can count on in a business plan to continue this so we can preserve these games year after year.
And it's funny with Konami, like, that's a super interesting situation right now with them kind of taking a big step back in terms of, you know, Metal Gear and AAA games. And I think a lot of people, and I talked about this on the Player One podcast, when people were, like, so down on Konami, like, with all the stuff that in terms of their transition away. And I think we can never forget, like, we owe Konami so much for Contra, for Castlevania, for Gradius, for so many video game franchises that have shaped the way games are today. So, and you can still get that stuff, right? Like, you can still go to the eShop and you can still go to eBay.
And I think people are assuming Konami's not going to support those older games or those franchises anymore because of the current climate or what they're reading about.
Right.
Stuff. But, like, at the end of the day, we talk about this a lot. Like, we don't really know what happened behind closed doors.
Exactly.
We don't really know who did what or anything like that. We speculate. There's a really interesting story that is out there because it's so easy to, like, side with, like, the creator of the game and all this kind of stuff, which I'm not picking sides here or anything. But it's like, you know, there's something more to it that later on the history books are going to tell. But until then, it's easy to villainize Konami, but they do have, like, all our most beloved franchises, and I don't think they intend to do any harm to those anytime soon,
right?
Because that's how they stay alive. And they also have Hudson Soft, which has a huge catalog with great games, and they have other franchises too that they were able to acquire over the years and that sort of thing. So, yeah, there's going to be, like, some focus on mobile here and there and all that kind of stuff, but I don't think Konami is trying to retreat from consoles or anything like that. I think they're just in a weird spot right now, and they're just trying to figure out how they, like, evolve their business, and I don't think they have answers entirely yet. And that's – I mean, you see the same thing happening with Nintendo and all these other companies too that are really rooted in classic style, like, approach to business with you know, hardware or franchises and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's the internet. They jump to conclusions when it comes to something that they care really dearly about. Like, they get worried that, man, I'm not going to be able to see another Castlevania game. I'm never going to see, like, what if I want to play a version of Bomberman? How am I going to ever do that again? Like, why can't they release this stuff to, you know, allow us to play it on newer consoles? But even if you look at stuff like Neo Geo, like, with Neo Geo and SNK, like, that, like, SNK is not SNK anymore. It's been ripped apart and put back together, but you can still go on Steam and play all those games. Like, it, you know, life finds a way.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, SNK actually just did that deal with Humble Bundle, which was brilliant.
Right.
And you could play all the Neo Geo games in browser and all that sort of thing. So, and they're taking their focus away, I believe, from, like, pachinko machines and all that sort of thing and focusing on games again. Mm-hmm. So there's hope for SNK even. Like, if you look at that as an example, like, these companies were built with creative franchises that they basically give their fans, like, total fan service, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not going to try to, like, throw that playbook away. They just don't know how to do the fan service right now and make money.
Right.
And so that's what they're struggling to figure out. And I think they'll figure it out. I think we all are trying to figure it out right now because we had this mobile race to the bottom on pricing that people now expect for games. So they expect games to be super cheap. But then these companies who actually were willing to spend a lot of money to provide the best possible version of these games can't figure out how to make the model work. And so they can't, like, make it super cheap and then spend, like, $1 million on a game. So they're trying to figure it all out. And, you know, I think we need to, as gamers, also try to figure out, like, the way that we approach these franchises and not, like, we have to figure out how we support these companies. And whether it's, I think we're going to see something come along. Somebody's just going to prove out some simple model that's going to make everybody go, like, oh, that's how you do it. And then you'll see all these franchises come back. And good form, too, I believe.
I hope that they could just make pachinko a thing in the United States. If we could just get pachinko parlors in the cities so I can play crazy casino-based versions of all my favorite video games.
That's the thing. You see these pachinko machines that are themed, like even like Bonk and stuff like that. And you're like, oh, I'd play that pachinko machine.
It's weird. I'm not going to buy another arcade machine, but I still like sometimes when I post stuff on Craigslist, I'm like, I'm just going to see what's out there. And like sometimes I'll see people who have imported like pachinko machines from Japan or like arcade games from Japan. I'll be like, oh man, that'd be really cool to have in my house. And now that they got like Persona 4 pachinko machines, it makes it a little bit more tempting. But then I remember, man, pachinko parlors are a really depressing part of Japan, and I probably want to avoid having that in my house.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're cool talking about this, but like I'm curious with, you know, some games, like I know the Bubsy games just got re-released on Steam, and like what the publisher did was like just basically use SNES 9X to the emulator,
yeah,
and just kind of like drag and drop the ROMs and put it in a wrapper and threw it up there. And I guess obviously this kind of happened with like the Retron 5, where they used other open source code and never attributed to it, and they never paid for it, they never did anything for it. So I was just kind of curious, as someone, you know, I mean, that's kind of like what you guys are doing, is you've made your own wrapper for stuff like the Mega Man Legacy Collection. How do you feel when like there's just some publishers just like taking it? It is like, it's a shortcut, right? To put this stuff,
oh yeah,
out.
It's a total shortcut, but it's not too far from what you would expect people to do to try to make the effort worth their while, right? Like,
right,
they're not going to invest in creating an emulator and be able to get these games out in any way that would be profitable.
Games.
Yeah, for two Bubsy games that are like, you kind of, I'm sure they modeled it and said, here's how many Bubsy games we're going to be able to sell. And then they're like, oh, well, we can't build anything from scratch.
I would love to see that graph.
I know.
You know, the anticipated really sales of Bubsy 1 and 2 from the Super Nintendo in 2015.
Yeah, and then, you know, somebody's like, you mean I bought this license for what? And, you know, that kind of thing. So it's challenging. So I understand why that would be done. Like, the attribution part, though, like, those emulator authors are brilliant that all contributed to those,
right,
emulators. Like, we've actually used some of those emulator authors as consultants on our stuff, mm-hmm, and they've helped us write stuff. But we've always wanted to make sure it's above board and that they're doing things very custom for what we have to do and, mm-hmm, and all sort of thing. And, like, if we were to ever use any emulator because that's the best out there and, like, it would make sense, we would probably do it, but the attribution part has to be cleared up and everybody needs to understand what it's powered by and, mm-hmm, and all that sort of thing. Now, some of these emulators have shortcomings, and that's why we don't usually use them, because we want to make sure that the authenticity is like as absolute as possible. And a lot of these emulators are hobby projects and things that were done over time and a lot of contributors and run almost everything perfectly or whatever. But sometimes you run into cases where some things aren't timed right or whatever. And so we want to make sure that at least whatever we're using is as accurate as possible. And that doesn't apply to everybody who wants to play these games. They could care less, a lot of people. So like Bubsy on an emulator, for the average person who may be out there that really liked Bubsy, and I don't know who that is, but if somebody did, like, they will want to probably just play the game and not worry. They wouldn't notice, mm-hmm, any issues. If they're big Bubsy fans, they probably wouldn't notice any issues.
Right, they're not looking, oh man, why aren't the scan lines there? Why is it really smooth? They're just like, oh, well, no, this is basically how I remember it because, you know,
yep,
it's 20 years ago. Oh my God, it is like 20 years ago.
It is. And, you know, Bubsy, I'm being kind of cruel to it, but it's only because in hindsight, when you look at it in context with other games, but at the time, they were trying to do something really cool. And, you know, there are people who probably bought into the fiction of that and the character and all that stuff. So that's all they care about, mm-hmm, who are going to buy these games. So for that, I actually give them kind of a pass because they're not trying to do it for history's sake or trying to have perfect emulation because there's anything they're wanting to show from that. That their whole purpose is to get that game into the hands of people who liked Bubsy, and that's perfectly fine. Now, they need to give attribution to the people they either use the technology from and all that sort of thing, because there are kind of rules and guidelines for that, and I'm sure, mm-hmm, SNES 9X at least requires, I don't remember which one their license is, but like, I'm sure it requires some sort of attribution. And if they didn't do that, that's kind of a no-no.
Have you checked out that Retro Freak thing from Japan, that crazy new Retron-like console that also does PC Engine, TurboGrafx, and I think it does GBA and Game Boy.
Did they do that as hardware, or is that another kind of emulator?
It's hardware. It looks like it just is a, it's like a white brick that has a ton of slots on it. I'll send you a link for it, but it's just kind of like a new crazy trend where we're seeing not just like the Retron 5 seemed to have been rather successful, with its shortcomings or not. I mean, it's still like you said, some people aren't crazy like us. Like if they could just like find a box of old Super Nintendo cartridges in their parents' garage and be like, I want to play this on something, and they can get that and be happy, that's awesome.
That just happened to me a few weeks ago. A friend of mine came by the house, and he saw the Retron 5, and he's like, what is that? And I was showing him how you can just plug the cartridge in, but I was kind of talking about it. It's not perfect, whatever. He's like, I got to go order one. He's like, mm-hmm. I've got a box of games that my brother and I used to play, and I want to play on a new TV.
That's awesome.
And he couldn't hook his Super Nintendo up right. It looked bad and everything like that. So I'm like, all right. And so he went and did that, and like he could care less about the accuracy or if it's the real hardware running it. He just wants to plug in a cartridge and sit down with his brother and play games. And those serve those purposes really well. And some of these Absolutely. Systems, though, like the one you're talking about, if I recall correctly, they're being pretty accurate. If you can put in a good example is if you can put in a modern multi-cart, mm-hmm. like those Crix carts or whatever, and if that will run on it, that means they're actually emulating the hardware on the hardware level. Mm-hmm. And that's really cool because that's probably the best way you're going to be able to preserve a lot of these classic original hardware games, because modern TVs are so distant from CRTs that's just going to be required. So no one's going to mod their systems on a more casual way to RGB out through a FrameMeister or whatever. They're going to want some sort of solution that's going to go straight to HDMI.
Yeah, and it makes so much more sense now, and I've totally softened my stance on this just in terms of like general, because you know I will always have a FrameMeister just because, again, like yep. I'm crazy, but like even today, I just bought a brand new TV, and when I was doing TV shopping over like Black Friday, if you want like anything over like 55 inches, you're kind of like forced into 4K right now.
Yeah.
So it's even like doubling again the resolution, and then yeah. having to like upscaling of even 40p is not very good on these TVs. Like you really need to have a good 720 or 1080 signal for these upscalers to even make it look decent on a 4K monitor. Like this thing, next time I'm out in Japan, I'm actually going to be out there in March. I'm going to pick one of these up, but it plays Famicom, Super Famicom, Super NES. So it actually has, you know, the slots nice and wide for all this stuff. Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, Mega Drive, Sega Genesis, PC Engine, TurboGrafx 16, and PC Engine Super Graphics games.
That's awesome. So, and if it's doing it all accurately, that's fantastic.
And you can always use this as a barometer. Like people on Amazon Japan, like reviewers, are always super harsh. And
yeah.
it actually has relatively good reviews on Amazon Japan. So if anything like over 4 stars is like 7 out of 5 stars in the United States.
That's awesome.
In terms of Japan. So I will definitely check one out. And John Riccardi, who I'm actually going to have on next episode, I'll talk to him a little bit about it because he picked one up. And, you know, some people don't want to do the RGB modding and all that stuff and the FrameMeister and yada, yada, yada.
The number of times I had to explain to people how to do this, their eyes roll over. Right, totally. It's like, yeah. Go get a Retron 5 then.
Yeah, I just hope, you know, I think I love the idea of that thing. I just hope that either the Retron people, make another iteration because there's some problems with the hardware going, like games going in and out, and also – again, if they make good on a lot of the stuff that they made mistakes on, which would be great. And also it's the Retro Freak game console out in Japan. For $150, you get to play games from 11 different consoles, which is pretty nice.
So we're working with Namco on a couple things right now, and our friend over there, producer John Tam, mm-hmm. let us know that they're getting ready to get rid of a lot of their old Sony Trinitron monitors. So we went down there, Frank Cifaldi and I, we loaded up the car with all these last generation Trinitrons, which I have now in my office, and we hooked mm-hmm. up every classic game system to that, and we have those all kind of running full steam. I've been keeping these machines on day and night pretty much here with all these random games, and right now like holiday games and whatever I can find. I wish we could get that kind of signal again. And that's so challenging. I mean, we go through the hoops, of course, the FrameMeister and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it gets close enough. I mean, it's really good. I'm in this this forum, Club Pixel Perfect, that a friend of mine set up. And you're talking about us being freaks. Like, in here, these guys, like, they're as freakish about how perfect a pixel has to be presented on a television, on a modern television, as anybody in the
world.
Yeah. It's insane. And they post these beautiful images of the stuff they're doing. Gabe Suar, who's over at Nickelodeon right now, like heads up the group, and mm-hmm. they are just hardcore. I'm learning so much from them, and I think that's where I heard about the Retro Freak originally, was from them there, who also have the same kind of questions about like what the output could be like and everything like that. And but you know, we are a small group of people who just freak out about it.
Right.
Like I hook up a Saturn, I have to look at it on just a standard CRT. I can't put it in anything else because it just makes it look ugly to me.
yeah, it's just such an interesting time for this stuff right now, because and that's the Sega Saturn. I know last time we talked, we were talking like, yeah, like can you guys like maybe do some Saturn stuff, because that is the big gaping hole in retro game collections today. There isn't a good Sega Saturn game collection, and there's some of the best video games of all time are on that thing, and it's just hard to find a working console and then putting it on a TV or a monitor that's going to make it look good, unless you are going to put up $400 for hardware for it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been going through Saturn games lately just because I haven't played it in so long, and oh, they're so good. I think people judge it by some of the games they were trying to be better than what it was capable of. But when that system focuses on 2D gaming or a really light 3D, it killed it. It was so good.
I've gotten rid of a lot of my video games, but when I do go back to Japan, there's definitely going to be 3 or 4 Sega Saturn games that I pick up just to round that thing out, because they are timeless. They will never feel old because they're perfect for that that hardware. And last week when I did that Street Fighter II stuff, of course I put in that Street Fighter II collection on the Sega Saturn, because you have a perfect version of arguably the best, you know, Super Street Fighter II game and the best Alpha game on a one package. So
it's so good.
It is. It's so good. Recording this on the 23rd of December. So we have to talk a little bit about the holidays and holiday memories. That's actually what we got a lot of questions about on Twitter when I threw this out. And, you know, for the show next week with John Riccardi, and I'm also recording with Chris Johnson, we're actually doing Ocarina of Time, because that's like, for me, that's like in the top three of my holiday games, getting that on Christmas Eve from my grandparents and just not even caring what else I got that year. My parents are so mad that I got that on Christmas Eve, because they also bought me a copy. So they kind of, they didn't get me the special edition though with the t-shirt. They didn't have a gold cart and they didn't have the t-shirt. So I went with my grandmother's version. But, what are your Christmas games? I don't, was Yar's Revenge one of those that you got at Christmas, or was that at a different time?
You know, like my fondest gaming memory goes back way back to the Atari 2600. It was Moon Patrol, I really loved the arcade game and I would talk so much about it. And I went that summer before that Christmas to Tennessee to visit my grandparents, and my grandparents knew nothing about video games. They just, I would blabber on to them. They'd just be nodding their head the whole time. But what I didn't understand was my grandfather was listening the whole time. And so when they came to visit us, the holidays, they came in, they set the gifts under the tree, and I saw, you can tell that Atari shape a mile away, the box, right? So I'm like, okay, that has to be Moon Patrol, but I'm not sure. And it had a little tear in it. So like when everybody was sleeping, I like woke up, went over there and like peeked through the tear and saw that it was Moon Patrol. And I didn't want anybody to know I peeked or whatever, but like I couldn't sleep that night knowing that like I was getting Moon Patrol. And so finally we opened the gifts and everything like that, and I flip out. I think I opened that one first and I just didn't open anything else. And so I went down to where we had the Atari in our basement, and I put it in and I started playing it, and I was a little bit disappointed because it wasn't playing the music. So my grandfather comes down and he's like, "What do you think?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's good, but I just wish it played the music and everything." So I'm sitting there playing, having a good time, and he's reading the manual, and then just kind of leans over and switches the difficulty switch, and then the music just starts kicking in. It's like, oh yeah, the manual probably has all the answers
on the difficulty switch.
It's Atari music, so you can imagine that like they probably were like, somebody's going to want to shut this off.
Okay, that makes sense.
Like every note is almost out of tune and everything like that, because Atari only had like out of the whole octave of notes they could possibly have, like five of them were okay, and the rest were all out of tune.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was its best rendition, but to me it didn't matter. It was the music from Moon Patrol, and so I just kept it going and everything like that. And I love that memory because it was like my grandfather, who could care less about games, came down, hung out with me, got the music going, and would play the game with me for a while. And that was the only time I ever really played games with my grandfather at the time. And so that's a really fond memory to me. But there's another one, which is I had a Commodore 64, and I was a huge Kung Fu Master arcade game nut.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that's the side-scrolling IRAM game where you move floor to floor and you're saving Sophia at the top or whatever, classic video game style. And I was a kid and big into the BBS scene and all the cracked games and all that stuff back then. Like, horrible to think of how evil I was. But, you know, you get your games any way possible. And I would log into some BBS that was local, and I saw Kung Fu Master there. I didn't even know they were making it for the Commodore 64, but I had like a 300 baud modem. So I started downloading that thing at like probably 11 at night and just went to bed. And by the time I woke up in the morning, it was done. And I remember I woke up really early. I woke up at like, I was prone to do this back then, but I woke up at like 4 in the morning or something like that, maybe 3. And I just started playing, but I turned the volume down and everything like that. And it was such a good version of the game. I played it all morning, and by the time everybody woke up and wanted to open gifts, I was just like, go on, do it without me. Like, I'm just like, I'm gonna keep playing this game I pirated last night. But that was a really fun memory because it came out of nowhere. I never thought that game was even going to be coming out. Never thought I'd be able to play it at home and all that kind of stuff. And in the Commodore back then, a lot of games were created in Europe and released elsewhere. And in the U.S., it's really hard to get a lot of the games you wanted. So like I remember playing it, and there's something wrong about it. Like everything was just kind of off, like the timing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it was a PAL version of the game. I don't even know if it even really came out. It must have come out in the U.S., but it was one of those things where it was like made its way across the pond and over to some BBS in our neighborhood.
Man, that's another thing that's bummed me out about today's TVs and technology. I've had to like spend a half an hour watching a movie to adjust the audio delay out of my TV into my stereo to match up the lip sync.
Oh, I do that so often, and it's so frustrating.
Yeah, why are we doing that? Why is there not some kind of...
Isn't technology supposed to be solving things? Like,
right.
That's...
And it's even worse when I'm seeing Idris Elba in Pacific Rim in these saying awesome stuff, and it's just off just enough to piss me off. Man. Anyways.
It's horrible. And like I find myself doing that half the time because something will just, for whatever reason, fall behind, and it just drives me crazy.
Right. It's like, you know, you just put in, it, at most, if you're in stereo, RCA cables, and it's locked in. Like, you know, there's no, you don't have to. And that's the other thing, just to go on a platform for a second. Finding the right TV today for the balance of being good for movies but also being good for video games and refresh rate and you know, game mode and all that
near
stuff.
Impossible.
No, it's not near impossible, but you just got to spend so much to get the good TV.
Exactly. Like people are on budgets, especially if you do have like a penchant for movies and games, because you know you're buying a lot there.
Right.
And so to get that TV, you will invest pretty well in a TV, but the options are so like diverse, and the research you have to do, like I've been to so many sites trying to research televisions over the last 2 years, and it gets pretty frustrating because I just want to be able to have everything just work.
Mm-hmm.
I sound like an old man, but I just want it to work. I just want to turn on my game system and it works.
Mike, I'm telling you, I did the exact same thing. Like, I went and I'm like, all right, this is the TV to get. Then I read one thing. Oh, man, it doesn't do like 444, like whatever for 4K video. So if I hook up my computer and I have a good enough, like I built a new PC so it can do some 4K gaming. I'm like, man, I want to make sure I can be able to do that. So I had to go up a little bit. There's this great video that's awesome for movies. Like it's such a great value for movies. But there's tons of blur when you play video games, so I can't get that one. So I have to luckily, Amazon came through. They messed up a ton of stuff for me like in the last 3 weeks, but they came through. They gave me a huge discount on a really nice Samsung, and all is right in the world.
So. Oh, that's Samsung's great, by the way. Like,
totally.
I have a lot of Samsung TV that around the office and one at home that works phenomenal. But I wish it were a standard. There needs to be like a new established standard for lag time and, you know, like specific game things like the blurriness you see often on a lot of these TVs and that sort of thing. And the everything down to like, you know, your options on the true motion stuff that they do where they try to make everything look smoother, which drives me crazy. Everything's a soap opera suddenly and that kind of stuff. So I'd love to see just some standard like thing I could look at on a box and be like, nope, that's not mine. Like I need the AB72 whatever. If it doesn't support these things, I'm out.
You need to go to 8 different review websites and like I think it's rting.com is or s.com is where I went to get most of this information. But man, and then just very last thing. And then if you get a Samsung TV, which I agree is it's the best manufacturer. They beat Sony. They beat Vizio. They beat everyone. You have to also watch out for the panel that you get in your TV because they will make different panels for the like same model number. But if you get the panel from, you know, Mexico, it's going to be better than the panel that comes from, you know, some other country. So you got to look at the like serial number to see what panel is in your TV because some panels are vastly superior than the others and it's the same model, same price. So stop doing this, guys.
Yeah.
I'm so happy. I have like, and I like look next to, look on my desk and I have a Sony PVM and it's just, it's perfect. It's always perfect. Yeah. It's always locked in.
So good.
what are we doing? It's not getting better.
No.
But then, you know, you end up watching a movie like Pacific Rim on a 4K upscaling Blu-ray player, and you're like, all right, fine.
Yeah, okay, that's beautiful.
It's
okay.
Worth it.
Yeah.
So along with that, like, are there any games that you do pull out every Christmas where it's like, I know it's not like the Christmas Nights thing or something like that, but do you have your Die Hard, your Jingle All the Way that you pull out to play?
Pretty much. Like I do all the Christmas theme games just because it feels right to do. So you do like, Days Before Christmas and there's like Santa Claus Jr. There's a lot of Commodore 64 like weird games that people made that I've been busting into. And then I like the Christmas demos. There's the Commodore 64 Christmas demo, the official Christmas demo that would be in stores. They see, so I track that down so I can just have that on loop here in the office.
Oh, wow.
And I just have that kind of going. And it just, like, brings back old gaming memories. Because I remember shopping at – it was called Micro World. It was a chain of stores in where I grew up in Michigan. And that was, like, where I would go get all my Commodore stuff. That's where I discovered Karateka and everything. And I remember going there. And they would have in the windows and on all their demo kiosks the Commodore Christmas demo going. Mm-hmm. And I would go in there, rent games and buy games and do that sort of thing. But always having this Christmas music just tinny coming out of the Commodore 64 is all out of sync in the store. It was kind of crazy. But I do that stuff. But then I go back to, like, the games I enjoyed playing over the holidays, which now I'm starting to go back to things like Bomberman. Mm-hmm. I played a lot of Samurai Showdown games over the holidays in the past. So it's like, for whatever reason, like I get the Samurai Showdown itch around the holidays. So I've been hopping into Samurai Showdown 2, which was my favorite at the time. And I started just playing that last night, actually. And what other games do I've spent a lot of time trying to find. Like I play Super Empire Strikes Back because I think like Hoth is like the ultimate like Christmas thing, just like the Empire Strikes Back on 2600. I play a lot of that over Christmas.
Ooh, you can still. I was watching. I mean, it's been interesting to see now that Star Wars, obviously there's a new Star Wars movie out. Everyone's been like, you know, reposting video of whether it be like Empire Strikes Back on the 2600. You talk about, man, the sound on the 2600. I mean, it was kind of probably impressive. Like, oh man, that's like the theme from, at least that's like 10 seconds of the theme from Star Wars. But you also get to fight like big AT-ATs, which is really cool.
It was back then. I got that game for my birthday, which was in July, and played the hell out of it all the way through the holidays. And, you know, back then there weren't like, you weren't counting on things having a lot of content. You're just hoping it was fun enough to play over and over and over again. And that's a very monotonous game. And I don't know how I managed to just keep playing that. And we had like kind of a high score sort of tournament going on in the neighborhood because everybody had that game. Everybody had to have that game. So when somebody would like break the highest score, they would basically call everybody else up or run to everybody else's house and get them and say, come on, we got to check it out. And it'd be like another few weeks of trying to beat that score. So it was crazy.
Man, how did we play that stuff back then? Like even we used to constantly play just Pitfall and Combat. Like, it would just be jumping back in Combat. And if you look at it today, it's just the simplest of simple games, but we would just cycle through every, you know, mode in Combat and just constantly just be switching controllers, like with my cousins and stuff.
I don't know how we did it. I don't know at all.
But luckily, you know, today we have great things like, God, there's just so many, the explosion of multiplayer games on every console.
Oh, look at Star Wars Battlefront, for instance. I've been playing so much Battlefront because
is that game?
It's so beautiful. It's not the deepest of games, but I don't really care. I think it's scratching that itch that I grew up having with those kind of classic games. But I can get in there for any amount of time and then pop out and not feel like I'm giving up on anything in the game or I'm pausing some sort of like longer quest or anything like that. It's just a great in and out arcade style game that I'm obsessed with, because this whole year has been like the year of nostalgia. We're getting a lot of stuff back from like our childhood.
Yeah.
And Star Wars being one of the biggest. And it's just crazy to, like, before the movie Force Awakens came out, to kind of fall in love with that universe again through the most, one of the most beautiful games I've ever seen. And to experience that universe so, like, up close and personal was awesome. A great segue into the new movie.
Oh, man. We're not going to talk about the movie, I promise, because I know people are still, you know,
worried.
But damn.
I know. It was awesome.
How? I mean, it could not have been that much better than just a hell of a ride. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's amazing they pulled it off, because everything's against anybody making a new Star Wars. Right. You can't satisfy everybody. Yet this has enough for everybody. Even the people who are complaining the most, still at the end of the day, were satisfied with the majority of the movie because it delivered on everything it had to do, and it's a miracle it happened.
God bless you, J.J. Abrams. I mean, that guy has a free pass, and I mean, he gave birth to a new like run of Star Trek and Star Wars, brought new life into Mission Impossible with 3, and then allowed us to get 4, 5, and 6 now.
Imagine being that guy being offered this, and your first instinct is probably to run away because this could kill your career if you get it wrong. And
Spielberg turned down all the prequels. He didn't want to touch it.
It's dangerous territory, and so he was ballsy and went for it.
Is there a franchise that you would like be like, if a publisher came to you and said, "All right, we don't have the team to work on this anymore. We want you to work on this." Is there a franchise you'd be like, "It's just that franchise is too important. I can't touch it."
Oh, like a game franchise?
Yeah, you'd be too worried.
Street Fighter. Street Fighter would be it. That's the most dangerous franchise to touch, I think, because you can't, like, if you're going to do something new, I give the guys who are working on Street Fighter V a lot of credit, and they're really good. They did Street Fighter IV beautifully and everything like that, but that's so hard to satisfy the fan base that anybody thinking they can come in there from scratch and from a clean plate and slate or whatever and hope that they can capture what everybody loves about Street Fighter. That's so dangerous. That would be the one I'd be like, you know, as much as I love Street Fighter, I've worked on Street Fighter games, I'd probably say, no, can't do it.
Let's say they announce a new character and everyone just rips the character down.
Oh, yeah. It's and you're like, and we've seen it before. Like, everybody's ripping the character down. They're going to play the hell out of the game, but they're going to, like you said before, the internet is just going to be the internet. Mm-hmm. And they're just going to make that developer's lives miserable as they go out and try to make this game that makes everybody happy, while everybody's sitting there talking about how horrible they are. So it's such a horrible thing.
Oh, for sure. I wish I forget the name of, people are going to kill me, but the Japanese developer who just like blocks everyone that replies to him and makes fun of him. Oh God. From Platinum.
I know who you're talking. Oh man. Now that you're bringing it up, I'm blanking too.
It's okay. It's all right.
But yeah, that guy, I don't blame him.
Because it's just, you can only take, and it's, now that I've been doing like more podcasts and other people's podcasts, like even like the Player One has a huge audience and like 99% of everyone is awesome. And be like, why do you have that dumbass Kevin back on the show? He's an idiot. Like, he doesn't like, you know, the game that I like or something like that. So, and it's usually not in those kind of words, but there's a big game this year called Mario Maker. I have not played a ton of it, but as you know, someone that does develop games, have you played around with that game at all? Have you made any levels?
I have. I haven't shared any online yet, which I want to actually get in there and make a really good level to share with people. But watching people play other people's levels and how painful they are, it's so entertaining. And that's an aspect of that kind of genre that I don't think anybody anticipated would be so powerful. Mm-hmm. The streaming audience out there was craving a game like Mario Maker.
Yeah.
Because had we not had that, like Mario Paint and all this stuff before and all these things, like they couldn't stream this. But now that you can have an audience, the desire to create a level that can destroy other people and make that entertaining is so powerful that it's amazing Nintendo kind of walked into this. I think Nintendo's had a lot of missteps this year with franchises that just didn't work or just weren't up to the quality level you expect for Nintendo. Yet they were able to do two, maybe probably some more that I'm missing, but really exciting things. They launched Splatoon,
right,
which is something of a genre very new to Nintendo, and they kicked it out. I mean, they just
home
kicked
run.
It.
Yeah.
Home run. And then Mario Maker, home run. Mm-hmm. As much as like when that first came out, I was reading reviews for it. I picked it up and I'm playing around with it. I'm like, this is actually pretty good. And some of the reviews were good, some were bad or whatever. But like at that moment in time, nobody understood the potential of that game until other people started really creating some intense levels. Mm-hmm. And now it's hard to imagine a world without Mario Maker because I think, I mean, we've had conversations with other publishers that start with, we want to make a Mario Maker game with our franchises, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, so let's figure out how we do that.
Mm-hmm. It's the perfect time to do it. They just announced another new batch of updates to the game and new stuff that you can put in there. And I hope that they just continue to bring, like, they got to carry that over to the NX. They can't just leave that on the Wii U when that new console comes out.
No, I think Nintendo is walking away from 2015 with the, okay, let's look at what we did with Splatoon and what did we do right there. They did a lot of great things with that. And then they look at Mario Maker and be like, okay, we can now extend our IPs well beyond where we even thought the shelf life was, mm-hmm. by giving people the tools and the abilities to extend them themselves. And so there's ways that I'm sure Nintendo is figuring out right now or well before all we even discussed this of how to monetize that even more appropriately, mm-hmm. and probably make more money doing that than just spending all this money trying to create new versions of these games themselves. And so it's going to be interesting to see what they come up with next.
I think, like you said, I've just had so much fun. Like, the Giant Bomb guys have streamed, like, making of levels and having Patrick Klepek, like, play through that stuff and just making absolute nightmares for that guy.
Awesome.
And just to see, and it's just so fun to, like, even see, like, they use, like, the chat to, like, have input on how to put these levels together, and they just make absolute nightmares. But it's, there's so much potential in that, and of course, it's led to, where's my Zelda Maker? Where's my Metroid Maker?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think those are going to be very difficult for Nintendo at this point because they've laid the groundwork and got a lot of feedback with Mario Maker. And if you look at a lot of their older franchises, they're all built in very similar ways to Mario. So Metroid in particular. So you can imagine the kind of adventures and stuff they can let people create and share with their friends. To me, I think is amazing because I've always subscribed to the customization and a potential for teaching people how to make games as a tool set and a game itself. Mm-hmm. I love that stuff. I grew up with that stuff. I grew up with Designer's Pencil and Gary Kitchen's Game Maker and all these things that were eye-opening for me and taught me to how to make games. I think that's we've had like this drought for a long time of titles that do that. Mm-hmm. And so Mario Maker is a step in the right direction, and it can only go further with now the ability for people to share these things with their friends and stream them and do all sorts of stuff. It becomes entertainment as well. That is just awesome. I really, Metroid would be awesome to like make custom like holiday levels right now or whatever and share them with your friends. Like, here's my code and a Christmas card. Like, go play my game.
Yeah, I think that is, I mean, Zelda makes sense too. And I think their big hurdle is going to be allowing creators to make worlds and not just like, I think that's one improvement that they can make on Mario Maker is making it so you can make not just like a level, but you could connect even just like three worlds of levels and make like 20 stages and put them and tell some kind of story through that game would be way more attractive.
I think that's the big weakness is giving, they don't have the ability to give people to build a sort of narrative to it. Like even Mario had a kind of narrative to it. Mm-hmm. So they need to have that narrative glue. And I think Nintendo always has to go a little bit further because it's always challenging for them considering their audience or whatever, but allow you and your friends to also participate in the creation where maybe one world, like say Zelda, one area is your friend's, this area is mine, whatever. And then you link those all up to create a greater world and space that's fun to explore. That I think is really powerful too.
Again, I want to make sure I hit on some of the questions that we got through Twitter and looking towards the future. We mentioned Nintendo's NX console, and that's kind of like the new thing that we can all kind of speculate about and get excited about and make our wish list for what we want to see on that console. And I want to ask you, you know, as someone that loves games and also as a developer, like if you could just make a wish and have it come true with this thing, what would you want to see in terms of Rusty Lewis specifically asked, you know, potentially revitalized intellectual properties, series that you'd like to see on there, just kind of features and stuff?
You know, when I first heard the NX, I don't have any insight into what the NX is at all. So I have to disclose that before I get talking about it because it'd be like, well, does he know something that like other people have because I'm a developer? But when I first heard it, my dream was that the NX stood for like Nintendo and Xbox. Like it's a Wii U gamepad that's compatible with Xbox. Mm-hmm. As well as its own kind of thing, because I thought, like, what partnership would be the most explosive outside of, like, having Phil Spencer and these guys talk about how they don't mind their franchise being on Nintendo Wii and all this stuff lately.
Pretty friendly with the Rare stuff, too.
Yeah, like, Rare, and then they're talking about other titles and all this stuff where it's like, okay, what's going on here? So, like, in my crazy mind, I'm like, this would be a crazy world if Nintendo and Xbox somehow jointly did something where they could put their games on another console as well. And, like, I doubt that would happened in a million years, but that was like one thing. But as far as franchises go, what would I like? There's a lot of things that Nintendo do. They revisit a lot of their stuff already that I'm pretty happy with, but I'm dying to get a new Metroid game proper. And if this, whatever this thing is, if it can give to me what Metroid Prime was at the time, because like I was really critical of Metroid Prime until I got it. Mm-hmm. And then when I played it, I was very happy with it. I mean, there were some things that could have been better or whatever, but like as a Metroid fan, I loved it. But then they haven't really, like Other M wasn't really that great and all stuff. So it was like, to me, if they could reset that franchise, that would be amazing. And if they could bring F-Zero back in a way that's super exciting, I'd love to see those two kind of come back. Because I feel like they're not getting the love they deserve. Mm-hmm. But that's just me. I would like to see what the NX offers to see if that even makes sense. But that would be awesome to me.
Yeah, it's almost hard to speculate when you don't even know like what are the hardware capabilities. This is a Wii U that's also, you know, on that level, but it's also portable, so it's just a big upgrade to the 3DS that can hook up to a TV. But I think they have to think that they're going to do it this all on their own.
Yeah,
bring people to the table because, like you said, like the only racing game they've really had on the Wii U is Mario Kart. Like, there's one racing game, and having something that's significantly different, like F-Zero, they have Fast Racing Neo now, thanks to those developers. But having people keep saying, even if it like doesn't sell, you almost feel like they got to just kind of check that box off because people have been asking for it for so long.
Yeah, or even like I know it's challenging with Rare not in the mix, but like now that Rare and I mean the weird friendliness that's going on is intriguing to me. But like Diddy Kong Racing would be a slam dunk.
Yeah,
that would just I think be earth shattering for people, especially if Rare could do it. But and that would be then on Xbox, I assume, and then like on Wii if it were to ever happen. So I don't know how that would work out, but that would be a kind of a game that would be exciting to have. And as far as like other weird esoteric franchise. I would have said Star Fox, but I don't like what they're really doing with the current version.
Yeah.
I've played it a few times, and I know I'm probably missing something, or at least I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. But
well, they are just wasn't very impressed. So hopefully they're going to, you know, tighten up the graphics on level 4 or whatever.
Oh, yeah, those graphics were bad. It felt like an odd, like, Unity demo that's trying to be Star Fox instead of Star Fox.
Very, very plain.
Yeah. I went and looked at the Star Fox 64 again, and while the resolution's really low, there's so much more creativity visually with that game compared to what they're doing with this new one that I was kind of depressed about it.
Well, you look at what the Wii U is capable of in terms of just – it is actually a really – decently powerful piece of hardware.
Yeah.
You look at Xenoblade Chronicles X. Damn.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Beautiful-ass game.
You put it on par with some of the more advanced games out there right now, and they did a wonderful job. It shows that artists can make something beautiful on that device.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I guess we will just have to wait. It's got to be getting somewhat close because all the speculation and rumors and financials are saying that we're going to see something next year. And I've been using my new 3DS a lot. It's really tired. It's time to get something out there that will put some juice into this company because I'll say it again, even though it's been a down year for Nintendo with some of the stuff, I think that they've just tried to put something out for release. I still don't think there is a better developer in the industry for creativity and for creating games that everyone, like the Call of Duty guy, will like, and also like the person that likes Animal Crossing will like. They just hit such a wide demo.
They do, and I will forever love Nintendo. And yeah, they like Iwata's passing, I'm sure, is going to have a sort of impact on the company, but I think it's the kind of impact that will make them regroup and try to like live up to the standards he was trying to establish there. So I'm kind of curious what the post-Iwata Nintendo really looks like because he was an inspiring guy for all accounts that I've been able to kind of hear and see. It's like people there loved him so much, loved what he wanted to do. He was trying to do things that they weren't necessarily – he was taking risks. And like if they can continue that and not just go into comfort zone and release these games, like there's been this little kind of period of games right now that just I kind of shake my head and say what happened with Nintendo. But – I hope and I feel confident that that's just out of the way now and we're going to start seeing some impressive things like the NX. There's a lot of people pinning a lot on the NX because you can look at what's going on with Nintendo at the moment and say there's a reason this is going on with some of these games because the A teams are moving on to the new thing. And so I'd like to see what that new thing is. Like we still have a Zelda game coming that looks amazing, so
yeah. I mean, hopefully it's on the new hardware, so I don't have to buy another Wii U. Unfortunately, I gave up on the Wii U earlier this year when I did my purge and moved on to the PC platform for the most part, which is surprisingly healthy. Well, not surprisingly, but it's just Steam sales are really nice, guys. I'm sorry.
It's true, and like you can hook that up to a television and just play it like a console.
The Xbox One wireless dongle will be in my Christmas presents for my mom in 2 days. So once I get that, I won't have to run a 20-foot USB cable from my PC to my couch. And I'm looking forward to trying out some games. And I don't know if my 970 can push out 4K and some of this stuff, but I'll give it a shot. We're running short on time, so I think we'll start wrapping things up, but of course it's really not that far away. I was just kind of double checking my pre-order list, but February 23rd, Mega Man Legacy Collection will be out on the 3DS for $30. And if you want to pay, I believe it's for $50. You can get the Collector's Edition, which is in a gigantic box with a golden Mega Man amiibo, and that thing is already like actually selling out on pre-orders. But see if you can lock it in, because those gold amiibos, they're not just gold, they're actually just rare.
They're rare, and they're almost as expensive as gold these days.
That's Nintendo, I'm sure, is happy with how that thing went, because amiibos are still kind of like hard to find in certain forms. But
and you know what, like credit to Nintendo, they made the amiibos beautiful. Like they, you just want to display them, they're so nice. So
those 8-bit Super Mario amiibos,
so good.
I'm looking at what do I got? I got a Zelda one, and I have my Japanese Mega Man one.
Yep.
Which, happy to find they are region free, so I can use them in any territory. If you need to import your amiibos from Japan, you can do so. What else, you guys? I mean, is there anything that you can talk about that you guys have coming up? I know we're at the end of the year, and the beginning of the year is sometimes slow for
stuff. We have a few things. The end of the year got a little clogged up for certification, but iDARB's update is actually in certification, so it should be out.
Awesome.
In either at latest the new year, but maybe in between here and New Year's if we're lucky. But that is a cross-play version of iDARB, so the Windows 10 version will be available. The new update to Xbox will be available. It has new arenas, new game modes, a whole bunch of new things. Then it has DLC packs. We have a Walking Dead and Invincible pack from Skybound. And we have a He-Man Masters of the Universe pack.
Wow.
All this crazy stuff. So iDARB's getting refreshed and refreshed more regularly now. So people will be happy with that. We had to do a major overhaul on the game to start supporting things like the multi-system multiplayer, where more than just two systems can connect and mm-hmm. all that stuff. So we're on the path of a lot of updates coming up, and we'll have some more news on the next update, which has got some interesting new things in it, and we'll be announcing more platforms and all that stuff really soon too. So this new year is going to have a lot more updates to iDARB, which has been going really well for us. We also are working on kind of a successor to that at the moment that we can't really talk about, but we know it's coming. So hopefully by GDC we'll be able to announce what we're doing with all that and kind of the craziness that surrounds it, because there's just a lot of stuff going on with that kind of approach to design. We're making games like we made with iDARB, where it's going to be transparent game development, and mm-hmm. We're going to focus heavily on interaction with Twitch audiences and spectating and streaming and that sort of thing. So it's pretty exciting times right now for that. And we're also working on a few other projects that we'll announce here soon too, that play out in the VR space and other things like VR and stuff like that. So it's that weird time. The holidays are right before Game Developer Conference, where you start making all these announcements. So mm-hmm. we've got a lot cooking. Hopefully people will be excited. And on the Digital Clip side, we should be able to start talking about stuff pretty soon there. But rest assured, there's a lot of great things coming along there with a lot of old game franchises, like stuff I've been biting my tongue the whole podcast here on, because I think our audience here would be very excited to hear what's cooking there too.
Awesome. As long as Frank still has some time to digitize those awesome tapes that he's got.
Oh, they're so good. I see him here in the office, because he has the VCR set up in here and everything, and we will gather in the back room just to watch some of these things as they're being encoded, because they're just so hilarious but amazing to see still. I forgot about some of those. I had some of those tapes when I was way back in the day during the NES era and stuff, and I forgot how cheesy they were.
Oh, it's the best. And it's just like, again, I mentioned before, but thank God for people like you and for Frank for being absolute crazy people when it comes to preserving this stuff, because he was like, oh man, he's trying to find the best VCR for getting this stuff off of there. And that's stuff
that. Yeah, it works great. And the other thing too, some news is, they finally, Eric Willmunder announced and released the ROM for the true sequel to Star Raiders 2.
Okay, do you have a couple minutes to talk about that?
Yes, I do. Because Frank and I helped him extract that. So we went to some LucasArts event in which Ron Gilbert, Eric Willmunder, and a couple of people there talking about LucasArts and the old game, the adventure games and all stuff. And then afterwards, we were just kind of hanging out with Eric. And we're just talking about, oh, were there any unreleased LucasArts games and all that stuff? And he's like, well, there are a couple things here, but I didn't really get too far. He's like, I do have one unreleased game, though, that I was working on at Atari. And he said it was Star Raiders 2. And we're just kind of all right. And we're thinking Star Raiders 2, it's it did come out. It was the game that was, Last Starfighter, blah, blah. He's like, no. He's like, I was working on the real sequel. And then when Last Starfighter failed to the license, they failed getting the license, they just called that Star Raiders 2 and then just ditched mine when it was done. And we're like, what? So he brought over, and this is insane, he brought over all this stuff to our office, and he has this thing called a Corvus drive, which is a hard drive for the Atari 800. It's kind of advanced at the time to have. And so,
was that a developer thing, or was that a consumer thing?
It was a consumer thing, but it was no consumer could afford it kind of thing, so developers had it. So so he had it at Atari, I think, and stuff like that, and it was his, and it was filled with stuff, but this drive just would not power up. It wouldn't read right. We're getting errors and stuff. So it was this all day, all night effort to try to extract data from this hard drive, mm-hmm. and also some of the floppies he had. And we didn't know what these things were. He couldn't even remember what they were. We're playing stuff off, but we knew we were trying to find Star Raiders 2. And so At one point, we called like the one guy we knew who would probably know about Corvus Drives, this guy Kurt Vendel in New York. And this is like, mind you, this is probably super late here. It's probably around midnight or 11 our time. And we're out here on the West Coast calling poor Kurt in the dead of night. And like he answers, he's all groggy. And I felt so bad, but I'm like, look, we're a little worried because it seems like every time we read off this Corvus drive, like the data gets corrupted. And then he just perked up immediately. He's like giving us, walking us through all these things to do. He's asking us to like reseat chips and do all this stuff. Like the guy went from like groggy to completely alert and ready to solve our problem because he knew the value of this. So it was basically this night of, as we're pulling information off the Corvus drive, it was killing the information because it was, this is like the last ditch survival kind of this drive. And so we're just yanking everything off raw because that was the safest way. We're following all his instructions. And then we started sifting through everything. And we, sure enough, we found Star Raiders 2 there. It was all intact. And so we were able to recreate it, put it on a floppy. We gave it all back to Eric, who sat on it for a while because he didn't know how he wanted to release it or if there's going to be issues with Atari or any stuff. And so now, like over a year later, he decided to go ahead and release it. And it's amazing. It's one of those games where had it come out in the day, it would have blown people's minds because Star Raiders is a genre-defining game that inspired people like David Braben and Ian Bell, who did Elite, and all these like Chris Roberts with Wing Commander. Right. Like they're all those things owe a debt to Star Raiders, the game that inspired all of them. And so to have a game that was the true sequel that takes everything that was really good about that game and then adds to it, like Star Raiders had it where you are defending these star bases against Xylons, which are just like, you know, like Battlestar Galactica type ships, and you're warping around and you're defeating them. It's based off an old a server game or whatever, where you're going into quadrants and attacking fighters and stuff. But now it's all visual. That was Star Raiders' big thing, and it was the visualization of this very textual thing, and it made you feel like you were a starfighter pilot in Star Wars or X-wing pilot or whatever. So the sequel went from sprites and all the stuff that they were doing to try to represent ships in 3D to actually creating real 3D objects in real time on an Atari 800. And then beyond that, allowing you to go onto planet surfaces and then like leave from the planet and go back into space all seamlessly. It was just insane. And how he managed to get it to work and the technology he used to try to get it to work is just mind blowing. And so even today, when you look at it and you play it, it's really fun and it's really good. But when you put it in the context of when it was supposed to come out, that would have just blown the doors off. It's that good. And I think it was just sitting there dormant for 30 years. Nobody knew about it.
I wish that you could like almost put up a bat signal for the industry because there's so many times. And even locally here in Massachusetts, like 2 years ago, or maybe – no, it's probably actually like 5 years ago now. There was we had like an Atari office that was in near where I live, and one of the guys that worked there had a yard sale and just sold a ton of like pre-production and like prototype carts and hardware and stuff, and like the guy didn't know what it was worth. He just like sold this stuff, and I don't know if that actually ever got released public or if there already was that stuff out there, but it seems like, I'm just guessing, like from a lot of these guys that are still in the industry, men and women, there's just stuff sitting in their basement that, people would love to check out to give them the recognition for it.
Yeah, because from their perspective, they don't realize how important that is and historically, right? Mm-hmm. Because they lived it. They may not have been a really good time of their life or whatever, and they managed to keep it, or they've even forgotten about it completely. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we can find a sequel to one of the biggest games in the history of games today and have nobody really know about it other than like Eric and a few other people at Atari who were keeping it kind of on the down low and they're secretly building it as a competitive advantage thing and all this kind of stuff. Like the fact that exists points to there's probably, it's like when people talk about life in the universe, right? Like if one planet has life, there's probably millions more that do. And like the fact that we can find one game like this of this importance, there's probably hundreds more like it out there that, with the right messaging and outreach and, like a way to kind of educate people out there to look for it, we can find them. But we're again, like we bring this up all the time, but we're racing against the clock because as we found out with this hard drive, it's dying. We're getting bit rot. We have just data evaporating off this stuff and it's just disappearing. And so there's another effort going on right now. This guy, Clay Cowgill, who's awesome. He helped me with my Donkey Kong hack and all stuff. He's saving and preserving Brian Moriarty's game. What was it called? I can't believe I'm forgetting the name of it. It's an Atari 800 game that he was working on that was supposed to come out in Antic magazine, and everybody just assumed it was gone because Brian Moriarty never released it. It was talked about in the magazine, but it was never released. He managed to find, or somebody contacted him with the data disk that they had, and they were able to reconstruct it, and now he's got it up and running again. And this is Brian, Moriarty of Infocom fame, but he made a game that was based off like Quantum, the old Atari arcade game Quantum. And there were people who were anticipating this game for a long time because it had been mentioned in this magazine that it was like referred to, and people thought, oh, this is going to be great. Never came out. Found it. It's working now. These kind of efforts are going on way more than they ever have. But at the same time, it just freaks me out all the time because I'm thinking, okay, we found these, but which ones did we miss?
I guess it's just, you know, it's treasure out there. That's just like you said, we just got to find it in time before it's lost forever.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of now just like trying to realize who worked where are they now? And that's how a lot of people are finding things. Like there's somebody who worked at the New York office of Atari that contacted me because he had seen the Atari Dig documentary. And so he's got a treasure trove of things that now the video game history guys, history museum guys in Fresno are diving into with him.
Oh, great.
Hopefully, and getting that all sorted out. But like that's one of those things where thank God he watched that documentary, because then he thought, well, it was his father's. His father passed away not too long ago. And he knew enough after seeing that documentary that he shouldn't just get rid of this stuff. And so hopefully we'll see more stuff like that.
Mike, it's a crazy time. Like they found a Nintendo PlayStation.
Yeah.
Like a real Nintendo PlayStation that like kind of worked.
Yeah, you know, as much as we worry about things that are going on out there, this is probably one of the best years as far as discovering artifacts that were assumed long gone. And it's, I think, thanks to all these efforts of people all over the place on the internet and stuff who are getting the word out about saving this stuff that we're starting to see. I mean, there's documentaries upon documentaries and stuff. We're starting to see people understand it because it's becoming part of popular culture rather than just being some sort of nerdy thing that you have to look for on the internet. Now people are watching this stuff on Showtime and stuff like that. So I think it's helping a lot.
Well, we got a lot to look forward to in 2016. And, you know, I would recommend for people to, you know, make sure that you can be up to date with what is going on. Make sure to follow Mike on Twitter at Mike J. Micah. And also, let's make sure to give a shout out to Digital Eclipse at Digital Eclipse, just like you would spell it. And I'll put that in the show notes too, because we talked about that on the last show. But the new Digital Eclipse is made for people that are listening to what we're saying right now.
Exactly.
So support that stuff and get in your pre-order. If you want gold Mega Man Amiibo, get that pre-order in, because the only company that actually has limited edition stuff is Nintendo. When they say like the Xenoblade X, like special editions, gone in like 3 seconds. Like anything that like the Legend of Zelda, the Twilight Princess remake special editions, they're already sold out. You can't get them.
So, you can't get them anymore, and they probably will not make more.
Exactly. So if you ever want, you know, anything that is a special edition or a bundle from Nintendo, get on it, because they aren't like, yeah, those Halo 5 super special editions that were $250 were $99 on Black Friday. Like, it's not that. It is like, actually, it's going to be $100 after the game comes out, because you can't find them. So and also, yeah, don't forget to check out at Back of My Play on Twitter. I'm at Kevin Larrabee. If you would like to support the show, it means a lot if you go to patreon.com/Back of My Play. That just helps me set aside the time to do the show. And it's been a pretty decent couple weeks with the Brave Wave talking about Street Fighter 2 and this episode. Then in a week or so, we will have, like I said, John Riccardi and Chris Johnson on to talk about, you know, potentially it's in the conversation for best video game of all time or most important video game of all time, Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, which I'm playing through right now. And I feel it is one of those games that makes me feel like a kid again. Like, I got up at 5 a.m. to play this game today because I was right in the middle of a dungeon when I went to sleep. And then I woke up and I'm like, oh, that's what I have to do. I totally forgot. And it was, I totally, I totally solved it in my dreams. Like, I don't know how, but it is, it's like Portal or Portal 2. It's kind of one of those games. So, that's going to be a great game to talk about. And yeah, man, Mike, I hope you have a great rest of the year and a great holiday. And I can't wait to see what you guys have for 2016.
Yeah, I can't wait to come back on when I can talk about the stuff we have cooking, because I think you'll be pretty excited.
Well, we will talk soon. We'll let everyone else get back to, you know, at this time you might be driving or you might be flying or you might be unwrapping or you might just be fiddling around with your new TV trying to get the lip sync lined up. Man, why is that a problem? All right, anyways, I won't keep you guys too much longer. Hope you guys have a great holiday, and we will see you next time with Ocarina of Time.